Welcome to the podcast of Life Change Church, where we exist to love people to life change. We hope that this podcast is both challenging and encouraging to you. Enjoy the message.
Seven. Before we jump in, let me know I'm just ready to preach today, so I'm reared and ready to go. But before we jump in, I just want to remind you of a couple things that are coming up. Tonight, we do have student life, so that is for any students here that are in middle school, junior high, or high school. Student life starts at 4:45, but before student life, there's a parent meeting at 4 o'clock that I want to throw out to you guys. So if you have a student in those age groups, they're going to do a camping trip, and at 4 o'clock, there is a parent meeting. So come to that, check that out so you can get some information about that as well, and be ready for them to really go connect and bond together as a group. And then I do want to remind you, May 21st, the Connect Hangouts are going to be back. We're going to bring it back. We're going to hang out. If you've never been to one of these, what we do is we just get together and we just have fun as a church. We invite you to bring anybody you know, whether friends, family, neighbors, anybody, because we're going to have a bonfire. We're probably going to cook hot dogs. There's cornhole. And I will let you know that student life kind of has thrown the gauntlet down. They've challenged the adults to some volleyball. So I'm just going to say we're going to have a volleyball court up there. The big mud pit, if you saw that. We will not be having mud volleyball, but the mud pit, well, we may, it depends. If it continues to rain, we may have mud volleyball, but if it doesn't, that mud pit is actually going to turn into a giant playground set for the community, so it'll be a cool thing. So there will be a playground set for kids. Student life, challenge the adults. We will meet that challenge, and then I believe there's some talk even of kids' life challenging the adults in some kickball as well, so nothing like some good competition. But I just want to remind you that that's May 21st at 5 p.m., so bring everybody you know. But today we're going to jump in, and we're going to continue this sermon series entitled Seven. And in this series, what we've been doing is we've been looking at some of the miracles that Jesus did throughout his ministry, and we're really digging into those to look at how they impact our lives. And we started off this series, we had the incredible honor to hear from my pastor and from my mentor, Conan Stevens, and man, he brought it big time, right? And he really gave us the central theme for this entire series. Really what we can walk away with when we go through all these 7 weeks, we need to understand this, and this is what it is. It's that problems are a miracle opportunity. I think many of us, we go through problems, and we just see that as the end result. Many of us, we've experienced these issues, and we see that as the end result, but what those problems are, they're a miracle opportunity. We can't experience a miracle unless we have a problem. Our problems, our issues are really what set us up for a miracle. Our setbacks are what set us up for a miracle. Our struggles, our pitfalls, those are what make us a candidate for a miracle. And we see this all throughout the life and the ministry of Jesus. Again, Jesus walked into all these towns, right? And he never walked into a perfect town. He walked into these towns with people who had issues. He walked into these towns with people who had problems. And when Jesus walked into these towns, he embraced these people. He embraced these people with these problems, and he embraces our problems as well. So through this series, what we're doing is we're looking how Jesus meets us in our place of need. He'll meet us right within our problem, right within our issue. Again, we started off this series, and we looked at really how Jesus can turn our disappointment into astonishment. And we looked at the miracle of Jesus turning the water into wine, which demonstrated this perfectly. Then last week, we talked a little bit about how Jesus really meets us in our place of doubt and turns our doubt into faith. And we looked at the miracle of the healing of the official's son last week, and it really demonstrated this as well. And we also learned that faith removes the distance between us and a miracle. And really, all these things kind of build upon each other. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to continue, and we're going to look at the third miracle in the book of John by Jesus, which is known as the healing at the pool, or the healing of the man on the mat. And again, each one of these seven miracles, they come from the book of John. So if you have your Bibles, you can start turning with me there to the book of John. And you see these seven miracles, and really, these are seven miracles that happened before his death and resurrection. These are seven miracles that are really pinpointed in the book of John. And what we're going to look at today is John chapter 5, verses 1 through 15. So if you have your Bibles, go there with me to John chapter 5, verses 1 through 15. And again, if you don't have a Bible, if you see some people pulling out their phone, listen, that's okay, because we push the Bible app, which you can put on your phone so you can read the Bible every single day. You can take it with you wherever you go. There's reading plans, there's devotionals, there's different versions of the Bible as well. But I would challenge you to download that so you can have the Bible with you wherever you go. And again, John is one of the four Gospels. There's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and they're each four different accounts of Jesus' life and ministry. So let's pick it up here in John chapter 5, verses 1 through 15. Verse 1 reads, it says, "Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, and the paralyzed." So here's all these people, right? Here's this giant group of sick people. Here's these people who have some issues. Here's these people who have some problems. And you see Jesus walking into this group, right? And again, what's he doing? He's meeting people at their place of need because the problems are a miracle opportunity. Verse 4 continues on. It says, "From the time to time, an angel of the Lord would come down and stir up the waters. The first one into the pool after each such disturbance would be cured of whatever disease they had." So here's all these people, right? And they're around this pool. They're waiting for something to happen in this pool. They're waiting for this angel to stir up the waters. And then once the angel stirs up the waters, it's like a race. The first one in, right? They jump in like, I don't know if they do cannonballs. Probably not, because some of them are probably limp or have some different disabilities. But they jump in as fast as they can. When I read this, I really think of like a doctor's office. Like, this is kind of the waiting room of a doctor's office. I mean, if you think of a doctor's, once you hear the doctor say your name, what are you at? You're right back there, right? As fast as you can. If you're anything like me, half the time I'm just going to stand up even if they say any name, I'm going to go back there. They're treating me for something completely different than what I'm going in, but at least I'm getting seen. Like, that's kind of where I'm at with it. Because I hate waiting for the doctor's office. But I think many times this is really what this looks like. And when I'm in the doctor's office, when we're waiting for something, right, it's probably for something not great. Like, I'm not just going to go to the doctor for anything. Like, it has to be something bad. I have to be seriously uncomfortable before I go to the doctor. It has to be rough. It has to be some really issue, some problem. It has to be something I don't like. I think really this is kind of where these people are. They're in this feeling where they feel really inadequate. They feel really just completely at a loss. And this is what they're doing. They're waiting to be seen. How many of you guys have ever broken a bone in your life? Do we have any people? I think there's like two types of people, those who have got stitches or those who break bones, right? When you break a bone, like I've broken a couple bones, when you break a bone, it's a terrible feeling. Like whether you break your arm, whether you break your wrist, whether you break your leg, that bone, that limb doesn't work the way it's supposed to once it's broken, right? You know, I broke my wrist when I was a kid. It was like back kind of in the 80s or whatever. And I broke my wrist, and for some reason back then, when you break your wrist, it must have been a bad break, but I got this cast that was like all the way up to my shoulder. It was weird. We met this person in like a back alley too, but I don't know. No, it was just back in that time frame. It was a really bad break, and it was a terrible feeling. Like for that, it was a summer. I was a little kid. It meant no baseball. Meant no basketball. It meant no playing outside. Like it was terrible. The trade-off was I got to watch reruns and eat Swiss rolls and Yoo-Hoo and then move into Husky-sized pants, but it was terrible. Like, I broke my wrist. I felt completely unable to do something, right? And then, actually, a couple years ago, as like a 30-year-old man, I also broke my right wrist. Both of these instances are not really great, so I'm like just not something I'm super proud of. But a couple years ago, I broke my right wrist, too. And I was riding my bicycle, and I kind of nerd out when I like ride a bicycle. Like, I ride a road bike. I have shoes that like click into the bike. If I'm out of town, sometimes I wear spandex. Sorry that's a weird, we're just going to throw that out there. But I fully nerd up. So I'm in these shoes, and I'm clicked in. And once you're clicked in, you're part of the bike. So I'm like riding through town, and part of the thing was I was going through downtown Newark, and I live out in Lincoln Valley, so I'm riding there. And I'm like, okay. And I come to like the Church Street exit, and there's a red light. Again, I'm clicked in. Not really smart enough to realize I'm still clicked in. And like you have to like think through this beforehand, have a little bit of momentum, and then twist off to get unclicked. So no, I go to the point where I'm completely stopped, and then there's no momentum. So I'm like, oh no. And then the bike is, and I land completely on my wrist. I'm like, this is terrible. I'm like, okay, I got to get up, clicked on, kicked the bike out. I'm in the middle of the street, mind you, too, and there's cars around downtown Newark. People are looking at me like, so I'm like, I'm kind of hurting, but I think it's just mostly my pride. So I get back up on the bike as fast as I can. I just ride off. Don't even look around. I don't even care if my bike's broken at this point. Just ride off to go where nobody else is at. And then I'm like, okay. And I gather myself, and I go for this ride, and then my wrist starts hurting. I'm like, oh, my goodness. Okay, it's more than my pride. I'm like, I still have to get home. So I end up, like, riding, like, another 13 miles, and I get home, and I can't even move my wrist, right? So I'm thinking, this is bad. Like, this isn't good at all. And then finally, I'm like, I'm pretty stubborn, so I'm like, I'll sleep it off, right? Just take a couple of Tylenol. That'll fix it. I'll sleep this thing off. Meanwhile, my wife's like, go to the doctor. Do something. Don't just complain about it. If you're going to complain about it, go somewhere and do something about it, right? So finally, I sleep it off, and I wake up, and it's actually worse. It actually hurts if I even look at the wrist. I'm like, ow! Yeah, just have to forget about it completely. And I go through pretty much all the day, and then I think I call Sarah. She's at work, and I'm trying to work, and I can barely type. I'm like, hey, this really hurts. She's like, I don't care. Just go to the hospital, and don't call me anymore about it. So finally, I go. It's like almost a day and a half, 2 days later. I go to the doctor, and sure enough, it's broken, right? Completely broken, and not just like broken, like, you need surgery type of broken. So I go to the doctor, I go to the emergency room, and then they send me to this orthopedic specialist. And what's crazy is, like, I go into this orthopedic specialist. I'm telling you what, that's like a good business to get into, because apparently everybody and their brother has a broken limb of some sort. Like, the waiting room was always full every time I went there. Like, the place was hopping. Actually, it was kind of limping. But the place was, like, it was busy, right? This place was busy. And I go in there. But what's amazing about this is that regardless, it's the same situation, right? If they call their name, these people have broken legs, but they call their name, all of a sudden they're up and they're ready to go and they're fast. I'm like, wow, look at that. And really, it's because we want to fix something when we feel disabled. When we have an issue, we want to fix something. And this is where these people are, right? All these people are gathered around this pool, and it's really like this doctor's office. It's really like this hospital waiting room. They're just waiting to be healed. They're waiting to get better. They're waiting to go from disabled to able. And they want to do it as fast as possible. And this is really what Jesus is walking into in this situation. Verse 5, it continues on. It says, one who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. Talk about a long way to the doctor's office, right? 38 years. And then it says in verse 6, it says, when Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, do you want to get well? Now, this is an incredible question. It seems like a simple question, but I think you look at this, right? He says, do you want to get well? I think for many of us, he's asking us that question as well. Do you want to get well? But look at this man's response. In verse 7, it says, sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. Jesus asked him a simple yes or no question, right? Well, how's he answer? He answers with an excuse. He says, no one will help me, right? I can't get into line first. Everyone else cuts in front of me. Like the man in the pool, he knew what it meant, and well, he knew what it took to get well. But he also knew the obstacles in the way. And I think those obstacles, they had been there so long that they turned into excuses. I think if we're honest with ourselves, this is how we respond to our struggles as well. I think many of us, we've been going through something so long, we've been struggling with something so long, that these obstacles, they've become excuses in our life to why we're not getting better. And now we're not even answering the question that Jesus has before us. Instead, what we're doing is we're putting excuses in the way. I mean, think about it. We all have excuses. We have excuses to why we're struggling financially, right? We can say, you know what, the job market, it's still tough, right? Oh, you know, I'm just not in a season of my life where I can budget. I'm just not in a season of my life where I can give and be obedient in that aspect. You know what? I don't make a lot of money. I don't have a great job. I never went to college. I don't have the education for that. Like, there's people that are smarter than me. There's people that are better than me. So I'll never make enough money. I'll always struggle financially. We have these excuses, right? We have these excuses of why we struggle either emotionally or mentally. We say, like, you know what? I just don't have that confidence because of the way I was raised. I don't have that confidence because that one person said this to me way back then or did this to me, right? I'm angry all the time. I struggle with this emotion of anger because of what this person did to me back then, right? I struggle with lust all the time because of what I was introduced to, just because it's the way I was built, right? I can't go see a doctor for these things because that's not what my family does, right? I can't share these negative feelings with somebody because what are they going to think about me? Listen, sometimes we even rationalize. Our excuses turn into rationalization where we're even like, you know what? It's not that bad anyways. We have these excuses. Physically, we have excuses, right? I don't have time to go to the gym. Hey, we can't start eating right until we go to the grocery store. But I'm not going to like say, but that might have been used in our house this past week. Just throwing that out there. Like, you know, I can't really push myself when I'm running up that hill because I pulled a hammy. Okay, again, I used that this past week. Some people who run with me heard me say that. They're like, hey, how am I going to milk this? I'm like, as long as I can. We make excuses, right? We make excuses spiritually, too. We think, you know what? I feel like I'm never going to be good enough, right? What would happen if I walked into a church? Oh, the lightning would strike. God could never love me after I did whatever you've done, right? We make up these excuses all day long. But that's not the question. The question is not, why haven't you gotten better? The question is, do you want to get better? So listen, if you feel like a wreck in your finances right now, do you want to get well? If right now mentally you're a complete mess, emotionally you're a mess, do you want to get well? Like physically right now, if you're like one cheeseburger away from a heart attack, do you want to get well? If you feel completely lost spiritually, do you want to get well? We need to stop making excuses and just answer the question in our lives. And if you think about it, an excuse is really just a cover up for disobedience. An excuse is just a cover up for disobedience. Again, when I broke my wrist, right? When I was riding my bike, broke my wrist, I didn't want to go see the doctor. Why? Because I was stubborn. Because I was making these excuses. Because I was completely ignoring my wife. It was a cover up for disobedience. But if I never went to that doctor, my wrist would still be in pain today. I'd never be able to get back on a bike, right? I wouldn't be able to grab, like I couldn't even squeeze anything. So I wouldn't be able to grab things as well. If I never went to that doctor and admitted, you know what, I want to get well, that temporary pain would have become a permanent damage. So really, I think it's time for us to answer that question in our lives. Do you want to get well? And this is where this man was. This is where he was. Jesus was asking him this question. He says an excuse, but I think Jesus' response is incredible. In verse 8, it says this. It says, then Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. And at once, the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. Boom, just like that. Jesus did a miracle. The problem created an opportunity for Jesus to do a miracle. And from this story, and from this, what we're looking at this passage right here, is here's what I want us to walk away with today. Here's what I want us to understand. Jesus' ability overrides our disability. Jesus' ability overrides our disability, regardless of what it is. So we need to stop making excuses because his ability can override our disability and our finances. His ability can override any negative or self-deprecating thoughts that we continually have over ourselves. His ability can override any of these physical ailments that we struggle with. His ability can override any of our mistakes that we've made in the past. Jesus' ability overrides our disability. And I like verse 9 here again. Let's read this again. It says, at once the man was cured. Because of Jesus, because of his ability, the man was cured. Another version reads it this way. It says, he was made whole. The man was healed. He was cleansed. He was relieved of any of his prior disabilities. His issues, his problems, they were solved. Think about that. Imagine that in your life, right? Think about that in your lives. Imagine this issue that maybe you have in your marriage that needs a miracle. Imagine it becoming made whole. Imagine a sickness that you're continually struggling with. Imagine being healed. Imagine this financial strain that you're struggling with. Imagine feeling relieved. Imagine that emotional baggage, that emotional scarring. Imagine those issues being solved. That's what happens when we stop making excuses and just answer the question. That's what happens when we allow Jesus' ability to override our disability. Jesus' ability overrides our disability. The hard part about this truth, though, and that what we need to remember is that it's always within his timing. You continue this story, pick up right here in verse 9 again. It says, the day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And so the Jewish leaders said to the man who had been healed, it's the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat. Now, this is an interesting part of the story right here. Here's Jesus, and he healed this man on the Sabbath. Now, to religious leaders, this was a terrible thing. Like, this was completely something obscene that they took really serious. Jesus was breaking some laws. This man was breaking some laws because he was carrying this mat. The Sabbath was really a religious observation where they would abstain from any type of work. And the type of work that was defined, it was defined by these religious leaders. So much so to the point where they really only allowed to walk just a few miles each day that the Sabbath was going on, right? Each Sabbath day, they're only supposed to walk a couple things. There's these intense religious guidelines. But what we can learn from this passage is that the work of Jesus doesn't always fall within our timeline or within the guidelines of our religious rituals. I'm going to repeat that again. Let that sit in a little bit. But the work of Jesus doesn't always fall within our timeline or within the guidelines of our own religious rituals. For some of you that grew up in church, that probably makes you feel a little uncomfortable. For some of you that are waiting on Jesus because you're doing all the right things that are lined out, as people have told you, right, that probably makes you feel a little bit frustrated. And if you look at it, it didn't set right with the religious people at the time either. In fact, they were actually like searching out for Jesus after they learned this. In verse 11, it continues on. It says, but he replied, the man who made me well said to me, pick up your mat and walk. So they asked him, who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk? Here are the religious leaders. They're upset. They're like, who is this guy? We're about to find this person out and go get him, right? But again, Jesus is doing something different than anybody ever expected. He's showing them that following Jesus, following him, following God is so much more than just being religious, right? It's much more than that, but it's having this relationship and fully trusting him. And the same is true today. He may not necessarily work out the way you planned it. He might not necessarily work out it in our own religious rituals, but he will work. And he'll work in his timeline. And we can be confident that his ability will override our disability. So let's finish this up here in verse 13. It says, the man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, see, you are well again. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you. And then the man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. I love the way this passage ends. Right, here's Jesus, and he meets up with this guy again, right? It says that Jesus actually found the guy in the temple. Jesus followed up with him. He did this incredible miracle, but it doesn't just end there. He followed up with him. He follows with the guy to make sure that he's okay. He follows up to make sure that the miracle is complete. The truth is, Jesus doesn't want this ability just to be temporary. He wants it to be permanent, and he wants the same for us in each and every one of our lives. He wants our disability. He wants to meet us at that place of need, and he doesn't just want to meet us there temporarily. He doesn't just want to do a quick fix or a Band-Aid over it, but he wants to heal it completely. In our marriages, in our struggles, in our finances, in our emotions, in all these things, Jesus wants to meet us there, and he wants to fix it permanently. Jesus' ability overrides our disability. I think if you look at this man with the mat, I think for many of us, we can completely just relate to this man. It really hits how many of us feel, right? We feel disabled, we feel struggling, we have these excuses that we make. But I want to challenge you too. I want to challenge you to do what Jesus told this man to do. I want to challenge you to respond the way this man responds. So really our first action step for us to experience this, for us to experience Jesus' ability to override our own disability, our first action step is to get up. Get up. Don't beat yourself down, but pick yourself up. Which means we need to stop making excuses. We need to stop putting ourselves down, but we need to get up. If you look throughout the Bible, it talks about getting up. It talks about rising up. In fact, it says it about 38 times. If it says it 38 times, guess what? We should probably take it seriously. And this is what Jesus says to him. He says, get up. My challenge for you today is to get up. Maybe you've been moping around because of a problem or issue that you're going through, right? But guess what? It's time to get up. I think the truth is, many of us, we're struggling with an issue. We're struggling with something that's holding us down. And we're struggling with this wound. But really what we're doing is we're holding on to it. We need to get up. This past week, my son Griffin, on Wednesday night, we had band practice here, and then he was running out there. We didn't really see him. But he goes there, and he just like falls down outside this door here, right? Scrapes up his knees. Like, it looked like a pretty regular scrape, but like he made a big deal out of it, right? And I don't know where he gets this idea of milking injuries or anything like that. But he goes out there, and then I get him into the seat. I get him a paper towel, put him on his knee, make sure he's okay. And then we go down, and we go home, and, like, he wouldn't walk. I'm thinking, like, dude, what are you doing? He's like, carry me, Dad, carry me. So I carry him and, like, get him on the couch, and he's watching TV. And I'm like, walk. And he's like, I can't walk. So we do the whole check to make sure he's okay, to make sure nothing is seriously bad. So lay him down, straighten out his leg. I tell him to push my hands with his legs. He's pushing. I'm like, all right, kick your feet. So he starts kicking. Then he starts getting a little hyper and starts kicking a little bit more. It goes crazy. And then we get him back. I'm like, all right, dude, you can completely walk. You're putting tons of pressure on my arm. You're fine, on my hand. You're completely fine. But he's like, he wouldn't walk. Finally, I yelled him enough, and then he starts walking. And then I actually put a Band-Aid on his knee. And then he's like, oh, I can walk. Cool. Because a Band-Aid does that, right? So he walked, and he went to bed. And then he woke up Thursday morning, and then again, the Band-Aid's still on, but now he's not walking again. I'm like, oh, no, this is lingering. Maybe he seriously is something wrong. So we did the test again. He's kicking. He gets hyper again, starts kicking a little bit more. And then he wouldn't walk. And then finally, Sarah, he's got to go to preschool. So Sarah's like, walk. Get up and walk. We know you're fine. You know you're faking it, right? Just quit playing around and get up and walk. So he does. And then Sarah's telling me he's going up the stairs to the preschool, and he's like halfway up there. And then he realizes, and he's walking perfectly fine. Then he realizes, oh, wait, I'm supposed to, oh, yeah, no, my knee hurts. And he goes for the wrong knee first and then goes the other one, right? But I think this is what we do. So many times we fake this injury. We wallow in our own self-pity. We do all this, and all we need to do is we need to get up and walk. I think there's some things in our past that we need to get over and get up and walk. There's some things in our past that we need to seal up completely to never be open again. We need to get up and walk. It's time to get up. To experience Jesus' ability and over our disability, we need to get up. And number two, we need to pick up your mat. Pick up your mat. Stop waiting for someone else to do what only you can do. I think there's some things in our lives that only we can do. And it's time to do those things. Pick up your mat. Stop waiting for somebody else to do it. Pick it up. Stop blaming somebody else for your own problems. Stop sitting on all your excuses. Stop trying to take the focus off yourself in the midst of your trouble. But pick up your mat and walk. Face it head on. I need one volunteer. Quentin Keener. Called you out. I'm a little scared about this too. But I got this mat up here, right? And I'm going to sit on it because I know you could probably just rip it and make me fall. But I'm going to sit on this and then see if Quentin can get me off of this mat. And this is really what we do. So I'm a little nervous, but all right, you go ahead, bud. Woo! Okay. That's good. That's good to know. I picked a bigger guy in the first service to see how it would go the second. But if you look at it, really, what do we do? I think that's what we do with our problems. That's what we do with our issues. We have this mat, right? And we walk around with it. We hold on to it. We sit on it so nobody else can get it. And really what it is our excuses. I wrote a bunch of stuff here, right? There's so many things that we hold on to, right? We're too ugly. I'm not good enough. There's not enough money. Too skinny. I don't have that problem. Too fat. I'm too sick, right? Some things of my past, right? I'm too old. I'm too young. I don't have college. I'm too scared. All this stuff, right? I'm too disabled. All these things I think we hold on to and we sit and we completely sit on them. And the only person that can ever pick them up is us. It's time to pick up our mat. Verse 8, it says, pick up your mat. What are your excuses? What are the things that you're doing? What are the things that you're holding on to that are keeping you from moving forward? What are the things that you're holding on to that are keeping you from experiencing the ability that Jesus wants to give you? It's time to pick up your mat. Do for you what only you can do. And then number 3, is walk. Again, it's a reoccurring principle here. You see this throughout all these miracles, but we have to walk out in obedience. Miracles occur one step of obedience at a time. For many of us, it's time to move. For many of us, it's time for us just to simply take that step and walk. Where do you need to walk right now? Think about it. Where do you need to take that step of obedience? What does it look like for you? Maybe for you, that step of obedience, that action step of walking, maybe it's a risk that, you know what, God's telling you to jump out. He's telling you maybe to start your own business, to change your career path, whatever it is, to completely break some habit, but it's going to be risky. He's telling you to walk. Maybe for you, that means reconciling a relationship, but you have to take the first step in that. Maybe for you, that means to start giving and serving in your life, but you have to take the first step. You have to walk. Maybe for you that means to offer forgiveness to somebody, or maybe even ask forgiveness for somebody. but you have to walk. Maybe that even means confessing something that you've kept hidden, dark, and secret for so long. It's time to step out in obedience and walk. Maybe for you that means falling up on a commitment. But it's time to walk it out. Whatever it is, walk it out. Walk it out in obedience. And then number four is to stop sinning. Stop sinning. And really, there's no explanation needed there, right? Our sin leads to our disability. Our disobedience magnifies our own disabilities. So stop sinning. Jesus says this. He says, stop sinning or something worse may happen to you. Jesus' ability overrides our disability. And in order for us to experience this, we need to get up. We need to pick up our mat. We need to walk, and we need to stop sinning. As the band comes up, I just want to give you a challenge right now. I want you maybe just to close your eyes, bow your heads. We're going to end this a little bit different. We're still going to do the response cards here in a second, but maybe you're here today, and maybe you've been walking out in your own disabilities for so long, and you never realized that you could reach out and that Jesus could turn that disability into a ability. The first step to experiencing that is making a commitment to follow Jesus. Maybe you're here today and maybe you never made that commitment, or maybe you did but you walked away and you hear this and you know that you're going down a wrong path and you're ready to make that decision to follow Him. You're ready to make that decision to completely commit to Him. If that's you, I just want to pray with you. If that's you, I just want you to simply raise your hand. If that's where you're at right now, I just want you to raise your hand. I want to pray a prayer with you. Just repeat after this prayer if that was you. Dear Heavenly Father, God, we thank you right now for sending your Son for me so that my disability can become an ability. God, I accept your Son as my Lord and Savior, and I ask for forgiveness of my sins. And I accept your forgiveness. In Jesus' name.
Thank you for listening to the Life Change Church podcast. If you were here today and you were listening and you made a decision to follow Christ, we would love to hear about it. Or maybe you're here and you're listening and that God is asking you to make the next step with whatever that it is in your life. We would love to hear about it and partner up with you. If you would, go to www.mylifechangechurch.com and under the media section, please fill out the contact us information and let us know if you made a decision to follow Christ. Let us know what God is asking of you. And if you need prayer, we would love to partner up with you in prayer as well. We hope that you enjoyed the podcast and that it both encouraged and challenged you. Have a great week.